With the novel coronavirus outbreak now showing signs of containment in most of China, growing attention is being paid to getting businesses back into normal operation and revitalizing a stuttering economy. In the effort to encourage companies to resume work as quickly as possible while protecting their employees from the virus, the Chinese authorities have issued many guidelines about employers' obligations during this critical period, but the result has often been confusion among foreign and local businesses alike. I'm Vincent Chow, a reporter at China Law and Practice and host of the China Law Podcast, a weekly podcast exploring China's business and financial sectors from a legal perspective, brought to you by LegalSpeak. With me today to bring some clarity for employers during this incredibly challenging period is Jonathan Isaacs, head of Baker McKenzie's China employment practice based here in Hong Kong and an expert on Chinese employment law matters. In today's episode, Jonathan will discuss what employers in China must do during the outbreak, from providing sanitary equipment at work to reporting suspected cases of infection to the authorities. Jonathan will also share his analysis of employers' liability if an employee contracts the virus, as well as the possible ways through which struggling businesses can reduce their costs during these tough times. As you'll hear later, there certainly aren't any easy answers, especially when it comes to laying off employees. So Jonathan, what are employers' obligations to prevent the spread of the virus?
Okay, there are a bunch of obligations that were set out at the national and the local levels. So back in February 21st, the National State Council issued a notice where they provided suggestions on all steps that employers should take in order to reduce the risk of coronavirus transmission. So for example, they suggest that anytime an employee enters the office, you should have a temperature check for them. You should try to limit the number of visitors who come into your office, and you should only let them in if there's an absolute business necessity to do so. And if they are to enter, you should also give them temperature checks. You should also have adequate hand washing facilities in your office or at your workplace. And if you don't have hand washing facilities, then you should have hand sanitizer on hand as well. Other measures include, for example, if you have a cafeteria, which a lot of factories do, they have their own in-house cafeteria, they should have equipment there to sanitize all of the eating utensils, and they should do that regularly. And if they don't have that equipment, then they should use disposable eating utensils. And there are increased body temperature check requirements if, for example, workers at a factory's live at a dorm or something like that. So they should be tested at least twice a day. So those are various factors that companies should do and is set out in the national notice.
Are the obligations set out by the local notices additional to those set out by the national notices?
Yes, that's quite common. Usually the national notices will set out the very basic requirements, and then they'll have more specific requirements at the local level. So companies really need to check the national and local notices. And a lot of times these are being updated on a daily basis or once every couple of days. So for example, in Beijing and Shanghai, companies should require their employees to wear masks when they come into the office.
Do companies largely know what their obligations are? Are your clients coming to you often for advice?
They have been coming to us very often, and the reason is there are updates almost on a daily basis, particularly at the local level. So right now, for example, we have a project going on where a company has operations all over China, and they're asking us in over 20 cities, what do we need to do to reopen our offices? Once they're reopened, what do we have to do to protect the employees? So that's a massive project. It does get quite complicated because different cities do have different requirements.
What's the enforcement been like for these requirements?
Enforcement, to our knowledge, has been quite strict. Not only do the governments, they constantly ask for information from companies when they're in operation, even before that they resume operations. Oftentimes, under local requirements, they need to get approval from the local health authorities. So in some cases, you just do an online recordal of what steps you're going to take to ensure people don't get infected. But in other cities, for example, in Shenzhen, they may actually require on-site inspection and for you to actually get approval before you can resume your operations. So we've seen local authorities take a pretty strict approach, at least in many of the major cities.
Do employers have an obligation to report suspected cases to the authorities?
The main obligation is on the employers, but there's a law on the prevention of communicable diseases. Actually, employers and employees themselves, if they know that they're infected or suspect they may be infected, they should report this to the local disease prevention control authorities or the medical authorities. But there is a clear requirement in the law. So for employers, if they discover that any of their employees have been infected or are suspected cases, they need to immediately report that to the local authorities.
What information must employers provide to the authorities when reporting a possible case of employee infection?
So number one, they have to report that this person either, you know, has the virus or they're suspected of doing that. And then any other information that's requested by the local authority. So oftentimes it will be their travel histories, where they've been, and sometimes even who they may have come into contact with.
So we've seen many migrant workers having to return to work after the Chinese New Year holidays, which has meant that many of them have had to be quarantined. So what are employers' obligations when it comes to paying these quarantined employees?
Yeah, so if the employees can't come back to work because of these measures, for example, it could be quarantine or medical observation or other government measures that are a lockdown on the city so they can't travel back to work. So if because of any of these measures they can't go back to work as normal, then the company's obligated to keep paying them their normal salary.
Can employers order their employees to be quarantined at home, even if the quarantine isn't necessarily government mandated? Let's say the employer wants to quarantine the employee just as a precautionary measure.
Yeah, companies are definitely allowed to do that. And in fact, the government encourages companies, to the extent feasible, to have remote work arrangements just to decrease the risk of transmission. So if it's possible for your employees to do work by phone or by internet and work from home and do their tasks, it's actually encouraged by the government to continue those work from home arrangements until the whole situation stabilizes.
Mm. What about if the employer wants to order the employee to work from the office? Are they allowed to make that mandatory?
Yes, as long as they have met the local requirements to reopen their office. Like I said before, different cities have different requirements of what you need to do. If the company does not do that, they could face some serious liability. But assuming you've met those requirements and you're taking the measures necessary to reduce risk, as long as you've taken those measures, the employee does not really have a justified reason to refuse to come to the office. And then the company can handle those employees who do refuse in accordance with their company policies. So it's really important for companies to check what do their current company policies say in this type of situation, because companies will need to abide by those company policies if they ever want to discipline employees for example, refusing to come to work.
Let's talk about employers' liability if an employee becomes infected. Does it matter whether the employee contracted the virus at home or at work?
In most cases, there aren't really any difference between where you get infected. In most cases, you can never say for sure how the person got infected. What the government has said is for most workers, simply getting coronavirus would not be considered a work injury or an occupational illness. The one exception is if your job is you're a medical personnel. In that situation, if you do get the virus, that's considered a work injury and you're covered by a separate work injury and occupational illness regime. But in almost all other cases, it's considered a non-work related illness or injury. Even if you could trace it back to work, it will depend on whether the company was at fault. So for example, if it did not take the steps ordered by the government to reduce risk, the company potentially may be subject to administrative fines for, you know, not doing that, taking those necessary steps. So usually the fines aren't that much. It could be a few hundred renminbi, but the main person in charge may go under administrative detention, you know, in very serious cases. That's why it's incumbent on companies to follow the national and local requirements. As long as it fulfills its requirements that are ordered by the government, then the risk that the government will punish the company if someone happens to get infected will be drastically reduced.
Would employees be liable if they spread the virus at work?
It depends on the reason for the transmission. If they have taken measures to, for example, quote-unquote, intentionally spread the virus. So, for example, if they were put under quarantine because they had the virus or they're suspected of having the virus, and then they intentionally leave the quarantine and enter a public area, for example, like the office, they could actually be subject to criminal penalty. If they do some intentional act like that, they could actually face 3 to 10 years in prison. So it's a pretty substantial amount. Now, if there's a do something not quite intentional, but say they didn't take preventative measures that were ordered by the government, for example, in terms of sanitizing themselves or wearing masks or something like that, and then they spread the virus. If it's relatively minor, they could still get up to 3 years in prison. But if they do some other, if it becomes more serious, they get 3 to 7 years in prison. So they really need to ensure that at least they're making best faith efforts to comply with the government requirements. So if you do that, you can generally, you would avoid criminal liability, you know, even if it happens to spread.
What does the law say about terminating employees during this period? This is clearly a very tough period for businesses, and in any tough period for businesses, you'd expect companies to at least consider laying off some employees. Would that be tricky, given how the government has been very proactive in protecting employees' rights during this period?
Yeah, there are legal and practical or political, you know, circumstances to consider here. Legally, in most cases, there's no special protection against layoffs in this period. The one exception is, again, if an employee is unable to come to work because of these lockdown measures or they're in quarantine, etc., they're protected against any type of layoffs. But generally speaking, if you want to do collective redundancy, those particular employees are protected. But other employees who aren't affected by these emergency measures, who in theory could come back to work, they're not specially protected against layoffs. Now, that's the legal situation. Politically and socially and in terms of public relations, you also have to consider it from that angle. So for example, what we've been seeing is some companies have already tried to lay off some employees because of the hit to their business. Now, usually what we recommend in China is because it's very difficult to implement layoffs under the law, they could always sue you for unlawful dismissal. It's better to reach an agreement with the employee, get signed a mutual termination contract with them. What we have found recently is employees, for understandable reasons, are very reluctant to voluntarily sign these separation agreements. Even if the company is offering a generous package to them, they're very afraid that they won't be able to get another job, particularly in the next few months, and they won't be covered by social insurance or medical insurance during that period. So it's becoming very difficult to convince employees to sign these mutual termination contracts. The other issue is political. Governments, obviously, they're encouraging companies not to implement these layoffs, though there's no absolute prohibition on doing so. They're trying to encourage companies to think of other means to reduce their costs. And they're giving incentives. So if you don't do layoffs, you may get some incentives, you know, from the local government. And then the final thing is public relations. You know, in these trying times, if a company does do a mass layoff, there may be complaints on social media. So all of these things taken together means that companies really have to carefully plan how to do those layoffs, even if they legally can do so. They really need to have to carefully consider these other factors.
What other ways to reduce costs are there then? What have you been seeing among your clients?
Yeah, so we've seen a couple of methods, and the government has also suggested, you know, a couple of methods for reducing costs. So one way is you can arrange, if employees are unable to come to work or they have no work to do, you could try to arrange them first to leave, use their annual leave, because if they don't use their annual leave, you have to compensate them for that. So try to get them to use that annual leave now. Another measure that's recommended by the government is use this period to arrange quote-unquote rest for the employees. And then later on when operations resume, you can have them work basically extended hours so that their average hours, once you average them out, would be normal hours. So in China, this is called a comprehensive working hour system, where during low periods, you could, you know, have them work fewer hours, and then you could ramp up their hours during busier periods. And as long as the average hours, you know, are not above the standard hours, you don't have to pay them overtime. So that's another method you could use. Another potential, and this is, you know, the million-dollar question. The government very vaguely says you can consult with employees about, for example, reducing their wages during this time or having them take unpaid leave. But what does consult mean, right? The government's always been pretty vague as, do you need to reach agreement? If you reach agreement with them to reduce their wages temporarily, that would be the safest way forward. But what happens if the employees refuse? Can you simply talk to them, consult with them, and then implement it unilaterally? You know, some companies may want to do that, but, you know, that could be subject to challenge. One other method that we're also seeing is if your operations are shut down for an extended period of time. So say these factories, they can't go back into work for over a month. So under the law, during the first month, the employees still get full pay. But then starting from the second month, you can reduce drastically their wages. So for example, in Beijing, during that second month, you can pay them as low as 70% of the minimum wage. Shanghai would be the minimum wage in that period. So for very, very extended periods where the factory shut down, at least on that second month, you could just unilaterally, without the employee's agreement, reduce their salary.
Have you seen many lawsuits being filed against companies by their employees so far?
Yeah, at this moment, we haven't seen any lawsuits regarding, you know, employees bringing lawsuits. We have seen a couple of situations where it's gotten a little bit contentious. It's not a lawsuit stage, but where we have companies ordering their employees to come back to work and say, look, the government has allowed us to resume operations. We've done all we can to reduce risk. We have the hand sanitizers. We have masks here for you. We're doing daily temperature checks. You need to come back to the office. And in some cases, the employees are still refusing to come back to the office. And so we're in the stage now where companies are thinking, okay, what can we do in that situation? So for example, we have one case right now where the employee is still back in North America and she has to come back to Shanghai in order to do her role. She cannot do it remotely from North America where she went during Chinese New Year. And the company is saying, hey, you need to come back now. And she just got a doctor's note from some doctor in North America saying, oh, she's not feeling well, so she can't get on a plane for an indefinite period. Now, the company doesn't really believe this employee's explanation. The doctor didn't even write down what the supposed illness was. So now they're searching what can we do if she's refusing even to come back to China.
This is clearly an issue that multinationals in China are facing as well, as many of their employees probably also went home for the Chinese New Year holiday. How are multinationals in China dealing with these issues in comparison with local businesses?
Yeah, multinationals and Chinese companies, basically they're facing the same type of dilemmas like the one I just described. What we're seeing is, maybe if there's any difference, we're seeing some local Chinese companies being a bit more aggressive and just telling their employees, you have no work to do, we're just putting you on unpaid leave, even though that's legally questionable and can be challenged by the employees. The multinationals are trying to be a bit more compliant, and so they have a bit of a dilemma in terms of how can we reduce our costs legally without challenge from the employees. So that's the main dilemma facing multinationals right now.
What about insurance policies for employers? Does that play a role?
Insurance policies haven't really been a major factor. Every company in China, they need to enroll their employees in the social insurance system, which is government-run. And employees would be covered by the government-run medical insurance system there. Employers are not required to purchase any additional commercial insurance. We haven't really seen companies purchase much of that additional commercial insurance just because of the coronavirus. But we have seen on the social insurance side, the government's trying to reduce companies' costs by giving them a few months where if they're experiencing economic difficulties, you can go a couple of months without paying social insurance, or you could reduce, or you can delay your payment of social insurance. So the government's trying to reduce companies' social insurance costs on that front. But in terms of commercial insurance, we haven't really seen, you know, any major changes or major impact on that area.
How adequate do you think China's employment and labor laws have been during this outbreak? I mean, have you seen any gaping holes in the laws and regulations?
I think for the most part, most areas are clear. They are trying to issue guidance in terms of how to handle this situation, because other than during SARS, China hasn't really faced this type of situation before. I guess the biggest area of uncertainty, like I said before, is if companies really have a serious impact from their business and they need to reduce costs almost immediately, what can they really do in that respect, right? In terms of arranging for leave, in terms of reducing wages, you know, if the company wants to be good to their employees and avoid layoffs, you know, what are these other measures that they can take? And do they really need employee consent to take all of these measures? Or will the government at least temporarily allow them to unilaterally take these other measures just as a cost-saving way until their business can recover? So I think that's the biggest area where we can get some clearer guidance and direction from the government.
So let's look forward a little bit. Do you see these employment issues getting worse, especially as the impact on businesses become clearer with time?
Potentially, and depending on the industry, it can definitely, you know, get worse. I know the national level government, they're really trying to push employees to go back to work and for businesses to resume operations because they are obviously aware of the economic impact that this is having. Local governments are still a bit hesitant because they don't want to have another outbreak happen on their watch, which may lead to serious repercussions. So we are still seeing some hesitancy of companies to fully resume all operations. I think we'll see a slow and gradual resumption over the next month or so, assuming there's not any, you know, further major outbreak. A lot of them have already suffered a major economic hit, and they may not be able to recover. So you will, once operations start to resume, if the companies cannot get back to their original level of business, I think you will see implementation of layoffs. But I think long term, regardless, you're going to see a major impact on a lot of companies' businesses in China.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to the China Law Podcast, a weekly discussion of China's business and financial sectors from a legal perspective, brought to you by LegalSpeak. Make sure to subscribe to our website, chinalawandpractice.com, to keep up to date with the latest Chinese legal and business news through our weekly newsletters, news roundups, and expert analysis from our network of leading lawyers and in-house counsel. Be sure also to go to law.com international to stay up to date with the latest legal industry news around the world. Stay tuned, and thanks again for listening.